You're listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast with Andrew Shearer, brought to you by OnlineAthens.com.
Hi, listeners. Welcome to the Friday Five, the very extra special Friday Five. I'm Andrew Shearer, the arts and entertainment writer for OnlineAthens.com and the Banner Herald, part of the USA Today Network. How about that? I wish I could show my press badge, but this is a podcast. I actually have a press badge.
I mean, you can show it. Does it make a
noise? You can show it to us?
Yeah, I guess I could, but it's in the car.
Sure it is, Andrew.
Yeah. All right. As you can hear, if you're a fan of the Bloodlust podcast or have heard it, heard Amy on my show in the past, this is Amy Powness from the Bloodlust. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing? Hi, Sam.
There's Sam.
Hi.
With me, as always, is Sam.
Yep, I am Sam.
Sam,
I am.
This is very special. No one has been on the Friday Five before except for Sam and I. It has been solely our thing from the beginning. So,
wow, I'm honored.
Well, we're honored to have you, Amy. Big fan. Big fan.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was telling someone that all you get to talk about is horror. But when you're on the Cinemaphile, now in its 12th year...
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. How about that? You get to talk about whatever kind of movies you want. So that's kind of an appeal to keep coming back, regardless
Heck yeah.
whether or not you like them. But I know that you do. And so that's always a help. So if you've heard of Friday Five before, typically what we do is we will pick the five most recent movies that we watched, or some five picks we will give to you. And in this instance, 2021 is halfway over. And so I recently published my top 10 movies, and I wanted to know what Sam's top five were, what Amy's top five were. So everybody picked, and we're going for it. And I will, as Amy mentioned before recording, probably these lists will intersect, and that just means everyone here is cool, which we already knew. So,
oh, great. No pressure, because what if they don't intersect now? Then we're just not cool. I get it.
Sam, they might... I mean, it's just, I liked Tom and Jerry. I don't know if I liked it as much as you, but I did like Tom and Jerry. I mean, it's got Chloe Grace Moritz. She's one of my favorites. Shadow in the Cloud, right, Amy?
Yeah.
In the Cloud.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Okay. God, I love Shadow in the Cloud. Anyway, so speak of Amy, Amy gets first. So we're starting with number five here. And we'll go down the line. So, Amy, you're number five for the halfway point of 2021.
Oh, Andrew, it's funny you should mention it because it's Shadow in the Cloud.
Oh, I swear I have not seen anyone's list. Sam usually sees hers, but this is going to be a surprise as well. Okay. Shadow in the Cloud, let's hear it.
I almost switched it to number four because you just said that. Oh, but no. I decided to leave it.
Stick with it.
Yes. I just watched this recently. What, 2 days ago? Okay. And I was really impressed. I'd been wanting to see it for a while. I'd been reading about it, like most of the movies we saw in 2021. Been reading about it for a couple of years and hadn't been able to see it yet. And now, thankfully, it's on Hulu. And it's so much fun. I think you kind of described it as a Twilight Zone episode, like a long Twilight Zone episode. And it really is. I mean, it's a lot like Nightmare at, oh, geez, is it 40,000 feet? 30. I don't remember how many thousand feet, but you know which one I'm talking about.
1,000 feet.
Yes. It's a lot like that, but it's got a lot of other neat aspects to it too. And it's got this really neat kind of claustrophobic feel throughout. She's in a little, what are those little gun turret ball things at the bottom of a plane?
Ball turret. Yes. That's what
yeah.
it is. Pretty it's much the whole movie.
Very claustrophobic. And the way that they choose to show the other members of the crew, I thought was really neat. And it's pretty unapologetically goofy.
Yeah. No, I loved it. That one came to me as a screener. I'd never heard of it at all. And yeah, I was like, this is something I would have gone to the theater to see. It was so good.
Oh, yeah. It would have been so fun in the theater.
Absolutely. No, it's one of those one-person shows, kind of like Buried or... what was the one that that Bane was in, where he's
oh,
in?
Oh, is it Lock? Yes.
What was that, Sam?
Lock.
It was called Locke. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, all right. Sam, let's hear your number five, homie.
Not my number five, we've actually talked about on one of our Friday Fives, which is The Dig with Carey Mulligan, Ralph Fiennes. This movie, like, never heard of it, saw the trailer for it and watched it, and it has stuck with me for half this year already, and I just keep thinking about it. For those that didn't listen to the episode, it's about this woman. She is widowed. She has this huge, like, plot of land in England and decides to really push for these hills to be excavated, thinking that there's buried treasure. And it's set during World War II, so it's really interesting in that, you know, a lot of the people just think she's some crazy old widow. And I don't know, it just spoke to me in a way that, you know, how we just didn't really take women seriously, didn't really look at their interests as being important. And so she finally just hires some guy who's kind of an outsider in the art and excavation community, and hires him and brings him on to, you know, kind of tear down these hills. And sure enough, one of them has something. And then all the men come running, wanting to claim the prize. And so it's a really good story. Very slow, dramatic. I don't know. I just really loved it. So.
You dug it. You dug The Dig.
I dug The Dig.
I probably made that same joke on the show, but honestly, I kept having to listen back to the podcast because I wanted to watch it, but I could not remember the name of it. And so I finally did. I, Sam, I did dig it. I dug.
You dug The Dig. There you go.
Oh, man. I get to say the funny things if I want to, and people can listen or not. All right, so my number five is called No Ordinary Love, much like Shadow in the Cloud. This one also came to me as a screener. This is a movie by writer-director China Robinson. I believe she's out of Austin, Texas. And it is about intimate partner violence. It is a difficult watch. It is one of the most difficult movies I've ever had to sit through. My wife and I watch... I watch the screeners at night after our kid goes to bed, and my wife will read a book. And whenever a movie is interesting enough, she'll put down the book, she'll watch the movie. And in this particular case, she took her book to the other room. It was that intense and that kind of messed up. But it is, I just have to say, you know, when we tend to think of movies being difficult to watch, we think about our Irreversibles and stuff like that, or Martyrs. We don't often think of, or maybe even documentaries, but we don't often think of like a narrative drama, right? It's got to be something really dark about it, like maybe happiness. This movie is just such a well-done drama. I mean, it hits a nerve, man. It's about two different couples, one black couple, one white couple. One's a cop, one's a minister. And the way that they handle this particular issue is just... I mean, it ratcheted up to the point where I was like, if this goes any further, I can't take it. And I'm just sitting here watching a movie on my computer that I got in an email. Anyway, so that's my number five, No Ordinary Love. You know, I interviewed China, and I don't know if I asked her, does the Sade song have any bearing on the movie? Because I wanted so, you know, never have I watched a movie and immediately gone, I need to talk to someone. Thankfully, someone I got to talk to was the person that made it. But that was my number five. All right, Amy, number four, what you got?
Number four for me, I guess I'm being a little bit cliche with horror movies because I got a couple.
That's fine.
Psycho Goreman.
I love Psycho Goreman.
It was the most fun I've had, I think, this year so far, watching a movie.
Tell Sam.
Very funny. The plot of Psycho Goreman is pretty much a Power Rangers, extended Power Rangers movie, but a hard R rating.
But someone from GWAR is in it.
Yeah, basically. The bad guys from the Power Rangers movies are being pitted against each other by an evil little girl.
Right.
It's just delightful. Delightful. It's by the people that made The Void.
Yeah. Which I like that one as well. Mm-hmm. The Klan were the villains though in that for some weird reason.
They were weird. They had weird Klan costumes, yeah.
Okay, so what'd you like about Psycho Goreman? Because obviously it is what it sounds like it is, but but without giving too much away, the dialogue for the character of Psycho Goreman, that was my favorite.
Yeah, it ends up being kind of a cute kids movie setup where he's, I don't know, how would you describe it? Like a kindergarten cop type thing where he bonds with the kids. He ends up being not so bad, you know, even though the little girl is just a complete psychopath.
Yeah, it's like if Monster Squad, you know, that Frankenstein's monster ended up with a bunch of kids that just wanted to send him to do murder. So I would recommend that. Well, who would you say, like, for fans of what? Psycho Goreman.
I think people who liked The Void but thought it could be funnier and campier. You know, people who wanted the Willy's Wonderland, the Nicolas Cage movie, to be good.
Yeah, I was one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, of course you want it to be good. I don't know how they could have made that movie.
Yeah, as it turns out,
fun, but they could.
Yeah, they should have stuck him in Banana Splits because Banana Splits was actually really great.
Was it? See, I wanted to watch it. I got to see that.
You know what? Before we go to Sam's number four, Sam, I meant to ask you, man, are you a Carey Mulligan fan? Because I know we just talked about The Dig.
I do like her a lot in films. Yeah, why?
I just meant to ask you that when you were talking about it before. I like her a lot, too. Suffragette. Anybody see Suffragette?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, I went to the theater and saw that. That was a really great one. Okay, Sam, you're number four.
My number four is Moxie.
Yeah. I had a tough time not like throwing that in the top, but I figured too predictable for me to do so. Moxie's
It was really well done. I mean, obviously this. Again, we talked about this one on our Friday Five earlier this year.
Yes.
It just was a really great movie. It touched on some very serious kind of societal issues that go on, especially with feminism, how we treat other women. Not just like how men treat women, but also how women treat women as well. And so it was really, really great. I watched it as a double feature with Josie and the Pussycats for my birthday this year.
Yeah.
Part of me wonders if it's going to stick because they both have great soundtracks, but it just, I don't know. It was a kind of a kick-ass movie. It just loved it.
Sam, do you think Moxie appeals to old people? People who like saw Riot Girl happen?
I think to some extent that it probably does. And I think that I hope that it kind of rekindles some of that passion they had, like maybe back in the 80s, 90s when they were getting into Riot Girl music and maybe they were a little more feminist sons of their own. And they're like, oh yeah, that's sort of like what this is about. Maybe this is a movie I should watch with my kid now, you know, because I sort of cool if parents watch this with their kids and like talked about it.
How do you feel about how they seem to try to address, but not really address, second wave feminism? How they had, you know, the people that were kind of maybe excluded from those movements, particularly the Riot Girl movement and feminism altogether. They seem to try and want to make to kind of right the wrongs a little bit. And even I think Amy Poehler's character even kind of mentions that sometimes, that it wasn't perfect.
Right. And I think that that's like, I think it's good to have that honest conversation. And I think the nice thing about this film is that it also tries to be a little more inclusive about feminism, that it's not just for white girls, but for a multitude of different cultures and genders to be feminist. And so I thought that it did try to fix some of those problems with the first wave feminism for sure. Whether or not it succeeded, hopefully it wasn't lost on everyone that watched it.
Amy, did you see Moxie?
Uh-uh. No, but I remember your episode about it and wanting to see it.
Okay. Yeah, it's a Netflix, so it should be still hanging out there. Yeah. I said I won't, you know, stumble over myself and say it again, but Moxie almost made the list. Let's see. For my number four is my cheat. This movie is not out yet, but I knew that it would be on the list. when it came out, but the list had to come out because lists were starting to come out. Mandibles by Quentin Dupieux, Pepe Le Pew. He's a guy that made Rubber and Deer Skin and Wrong Cops and just a bunch of like really weird, the movie Wrong. The one where that has the dog crap that can see people. This guy is like my favorite living filmmaker. Everything he does is so bizarre and he commits so hard to these weird concepts. Either you guys saw Rubber about the killer tire?
I still haven't seen it.
Sam, did you see
it? I feel like I saw it forever ago. Yes.
Genius. A work of genius. The tire is telekinetic. It rolls around making people's heads explode and falls in love with a French woman. This thing is just, it is, and there's more to it. I'm not going to tell you. But anyway, briefly, Mandibles, what it's about. It comes out the July 23rd. So we're like so close. Okay. Mandibles is about two like kind of dim-witted con men who find a giant fly about the size of a dog and decide they're going to train it for profit. That's what the movie is about. The fly effect is great. I mean, it's a puppet.
It's a puppet?
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
Okay.
It looks so good. At one point, it drinks out of the swimming pool. But the thing that is so funny about the movie is that, you know, he's good at having these kind of like dumb characters or whatever. But what I love is that everybody sort of accepts what's happening immediately. You know, the concept of the killer tire, it was just immediately we accepted. In Deerskin, the jacket that makes him want to murder everyone with the jacket, that's the plot of Deerskin. It's just like, okay, let's move on. We know this is happening. Let's move on. There's no like, how did this fly? There's no explanation about where the fly came from because no one cares. I don't care. Mandibles is great. Mandibles is great. Amy, we're down to your number three. Let's hear it.
My number three is Together Together.
I wouldn't have watched that if not for you, man. I loved it.
I'm glad you watched it and liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was very wholesome and sweet. I thought when I went to see it, I just go to the movies every week with my friend Jonah and I let him pick. And I was thinking it would just be a romantic comedy. And that is not what it was.
No,
it was a platonic comedy, yeah, which is something I kind of haven't seen really. And it was a lot deeper than it looked like it was going to be. And the performances were a lot more nuanced than I thought they were going to be, especially Patty Harrison. She really impressed me. And the supporting cast is really good. I just really, it was like a feel good movie and one that was not corny.
Sam, I think you'll love it. Have you heard of Together Together?
No, I haven't.
Amy, tell her just the basics of it.
Okay. That's Ed Helms, right?
It is Ed Helms. And he's
okay.
The reason why I didn't see it.
I know, because I don't really like him either.
Yeah.
But he's good in it.
No, he's perfectly cast.
Yeah, he does a great job. He's kind of a wealthy dude in his 40s who wants to have a child but hasn't been very lucky in love, so he hires a surrogate. And they become friends. They're both lonely people. And so they form a nice kind of sweet bond. And you think it'll go into a cliche direction and it doesn't.
Yeah.
That reminds me of like Jack and Sarah with Samantha Mathis and Richard Grant.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. From forever ago in the 90s.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of movies where you have these great friendship and then someone decides they're going to mess it up. Someone is like can't handle or someone like misreads. But there's always this moment where they say they're one kisses or the other and they're like, no, why? And you're always just like, that's not how life works, especially when you're the age of a character like him. Mm-hmm. You know not to do that. No one wants to see that. No one wants to see that story. What we need more stories about is the intimacy of close friendship. because that is so, Sam, that's something you and I have talked about a million times.
Yeah.
You know, and people don't understand it because it's not represented in media enough. Mm-hmm. You know? But it's like, other than teenagers who are always like, they just want to be friends, which is a very valid thing that happens when you're young. But when you're older and you're already established in your relationships and whatnot, people are still are very special to you, and you do love them. And, you know, why not have a story about how that can happen? So, Amy, mm-hmm. It was an excellent pick, and I'm so glad you mentioned it to me because I really dug it. And Sam, I think.
Well, now I'm going to have to go watch it.
You'll like it, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet I would.
Sam, are we down to your number three?
We are.
Okay.
My number three is Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah.
I will admit that I do not have a lot of background history about Fred Hampton and the story. And so kind of went into it not really knowing what the whole thing was about. And was just blown away from the beginning to the end. I feel like my jaw came up off the floor the whole film. Obviously, this is not like a feel-good movie in any way, shape, or form, but it shouldn't make you feel good. It should make you like check yourself and like realize like how much work we have to do in the world. So the performances, all amazing. You know, the way they tackled the story in terms of like telling everything that happened, being honest about what happened. It was a heavy movie, but it was good. Yeah. It was so good.
Yeah. And that music was great too, wasn't it?
Oh my God. The soundtrack was wonderful.
Yeah. The Oscar winning song by her, by the way.
Yep.
Sounds a little bit like, Inner City Blues by Marvin Gaye, which her style, I don't know if you've heard her whole record, but it's nothing but Marvin Gaye influence for the most part. It's wonderful. Amy, did you see Judas and the Black Messiah?
No.
Well, I'll say this, man, and this is to Sam's point. A lot of people had no clue who Fred Hampton was, you know, and the ones that did may have had their opinion influenced by this, that, or the other. But this film was completely supported by Fred Hampton's family. So they signed off on it. So this is the final word. But, you know, I got vibes of Spike Lee's Malcolm X when I was watching it, because it's a similar situation to where you had this figure, this public figure. Granted, Fred Hampton was lower profile than someone like Malcolm X, but still he is given the treatment of a Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. He's given the respect. And in terms of that heaviness and that darkness, and I know which stuff you're talking about, Sam, it related exactly to right now. It couldn't have mm-hmm. been made at a better time.
Yeah.
And so I would say to everyone that sort of like doesn't want to do the lift for Judas and the Black Messiah to just maybe go ahead and do it one night when you're in an open-minded mood, because I do feel it is a modern classic. It's up there with Malcolm X for sure. My number three, in stark contrast to everything that we were talking about, is Luca from Disney Pixar. And I got to say, in terms of kids' movies, there's not been a whole lot that I absolutely loved. Big fan of Raya and the Last Dragon. Really enjoyed Spirit, Untamed. But this is a milestone of Pixar Disney animation, because it is about a little boy who is half mer person, half merson, and half human.
Merson. I love
it. So in that way, you know, it could be seen as a continuation of Little Mermaid, or, you know, working on the themes present in something like Ponyo. But the parents aren't dead.
What?
Weird.
Shocker.
This is the first time Pixar has ever, because even The Good Dinosaur, which was aimed at a young audience, was still traumatic. Luca has no trauma. It's all fun. It's all light, and it is made for kids and not to win Oscars, which is why they put it direct to Disney Plus without even the $30 thing.
Right.
Because they don't have the confidence in it. But truthfully, this is Luca is the best Pixar movie. It is the only children's movie they've ever made. So yeah, I thought for that reason alone, it needed to be bumped up because some people hadn't heard of it. The advertising for it was kind of minimal. No one knows really what it's about, but yeah, that's the facts. So, you know, it won't be nominated or win any awards. I wish some of the press has picked up on it, particularly its themes that could be considered, queer coded, I guess, which my friends picked up on right away. My friends with children picked up on right away, especially, and were very, very pleased with, because, you know, when a kid is little, there's a lot of programming that kind of goes on, and, you know, and there's a lot of stuff with either a love interest or no love interest. But Luca has, I would say, just watch it. You know, it is for kids, but man, what an achievement they've made. I don't feel like, I'm sorry, Sam.
No, does Luca live on the second floor? I'm just curious.
You know what? He lives upstairs from you, and I think
you think I've seen him before?
So, we could do this for the next 3.5 minutes. Amy?
I have not heard that song in a while.
Suzanne Vega. What's your favorite Suzanne Vega song? I think I love In Liverpool.
That's my favorite.
Is it? No way.
Yes.
I mean, I was going to say Tom Steiner, but.
No, Tom Steiner. No, valid. Totally yeah. Valid.
Okay. It's not that I never had any of her albums, but I did like that song a heck of a lot.
Oh. Anyway, what are we
doing? All right, I'm sorry.
Where are we at? Amy, are we at
number two?
Okay.
I'm guessing you have this on your list, Andrew.
Well, I'm trying to find my list because I don't have it in front of me, but give it a shot.
Zola.
Zola is on my list.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Zola is great. Talk about a surprise. I didn't know anything about it. I mean, I had heard about the fact that it was based on a tweet thread or whatever you called them.
Yeah.
But that was all I knew. So funny. So funny and so fun for the subject matter. It was so, it's very strange because you tell somebody about the movie and they think, oh, wow, like it's some kind of, I don't know, dead serious drama or something or thriller.
Yeah.
It's not. It's very funny. And oh man, there's some great performances in it. All the characters are really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam, did you see Zola?
I haven't. It's on my list and I've been dying to see it. It's only been out a couple of weeks and so I have not seen it yet, but I've heard
you know
so much about it.
Okay.
Oh, totally. You know I heard that what's her face, Riley, had to put a cork in her mouth to learn to speak that way in the film. And so I'm like so dying to see it.
I was like, how do I feel about this characterization?
Yeah.
Because on one hand, you're like, but on the other hand, so real.
Mm-hmm.
So real. But you kind of like, at a point you realize, okay, who's making this movie? Okay. So
right.
this has been signed off on times 10.
Right.
Yeah. The Zola isn't on my list as well. It is a, for everyone listening who's like, oh, is what about the hype or whatever? I just want to say they haven't hyped it enough.
Mm-mm.
The hype has been inadequate because although they're calling it, you know, like the hot movie or the great movie or whatever, I hope it is treated like what it is by the time the award seasons come out, you know? So we are at number two for you, Sam.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
My number two is The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. So I know that over the years you have heard me rave. I love this series. I just love the series so much. And so when it came out, I watched it like right away immediately. And I was not disappointed at all. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, it's like the other ones, you know, same story about the same couple, the Warrens, and investigating, you know, some crazy stuff going down. But I really liked it. It made me jump a couple times. I didn't see what was coming. It just, I don't know. It was good.
Okay, Sam. Amy, you saw The Conjuring?
I did. I saw it in the theater.
Let's hear it.
I liked it a lot better than the second one.
Yeah.
I think it might have been my favorite of the three.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it was more of like a mystery or police procedural.
Wasn't a haunted house movie.
No.
So yeah, to me it was the best. You guys know how I feel about The Conjurings, which is the one where the person's got a flashlight and they're investigating a really quiet room. Which one was?
All of them?
I'm like, yeah.
No, it was a lantern. Which Insidious movie was that? Where they have the lantern?
That's Insidious, though. This is Conjuring.
I'm kidding. I'm saying they're all the same.
Mm-hmm. Sam, I still like them.
No,
I still like them.
You're supposed to stop liking them because I have a criticism. No, man. That was a big surprise, but not as in Sam shouldn't have better take. That's cool. Because what I'm going to be talking about with Xena about mental health and horror is just how like COVID really reignited my and opened my heart to more horror than I'd ever been. It was kind of wild.
Great.
And so we will be hearing about that hopefully next week or something. But anyway, yeah, Conjuring Devil made me do it.
It was a fun film, and I just like those characters so much. And Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga,
I know you like them. I like them too.
Just embody those characters so well, and so yeah. And then what's his face, John Noble? I mean, yeah.
And it's cool how Jesus and God always save them.
Right. And their love. Don't forget their love.
Their love.
Their love also. Is this faith-based horror?
Maybe.
I think the first two definitely were. The guys who wrote those were, I saw some articles they did on very Christian sites talking about how it was their calling to bring religion to the masses. And so they wanted to write God into all of their screenplays, the Hayes brothers.
Okay. Well, I gotta say, the ones I enjoy most, I did think Conjuring the Devil Made Me Do It was the best of the Conjuring movies. I will say I enjoy the other movies outside of the Conjuring verse. I like them more. I'm a fan of La Llorona. I am a fan of The Nun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fan of, what was the, Annabelle Comes Home, the third Annabelle. I'm a fan of those. Okay, so we're down to two for me, and then we're going to get everybody's number one in a cup.
That's right.
We're good. Oh, God. Anyway, so my two is Tina, the documentary, the HBO documentary. Oh. Anyone else watch Tina?
No.
I have to tell you, most people's impression of the life of Tina Turner is the movie What's Love Got to Do With It, starring Angela Bassett.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great movie. Obviously, Tina's still around. She was around when the movie was made. And so Tina is the documentary. This is and it's based off her second book, not the first. Because the first is where we found all the horrible things about Ike Turner. So while Tina does have that, and it can't not have that, it really gets the entire story. Tina is interviewed in it. Which I think is wonderful because you can't do that with every documentary that you make. Tina Turner is the queen of rock and roll. She just is. And while, you know, there's good arguments that can be made, valid arguments that can be made about who the king of rock and roll might be, there's no question that Tina Turner is. And if you had a question, you will not have a question by the time you finish watching it. It even covers Beyond Thunderdome.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, when you're a fan of someone and you're like, you're looking for that thing they leave out. The only thing they kind of didn't go into was her relationship she has with her kids, with Ike. And so I'm not exactly sure why they didn't go into that more, but I don't think if you're a fan, there's anything that's left out. It is one of the most empowering movies I've ever watched. I mean, I think people that have experienced the type of violence in their lives that Tina experienced really need that empowered feeling, you know, because if you've survived something like that, as we know, your power has been really diminished and taken away. And I'm glad that Tina as a documentary exists, because it's, you get one thing from her music, and it's a separate thing, I feel. From the documentary, everything is true. It's proof. So the feeling I came away with from Tina, I still, when I think about it, I can see it and hear it and feel it. So that's why I like it, is too. It's a recommendation, not just for fans, but people who just want to see a movie that's going to leave them feeling great and powerful. So Amy, we're here at your number one. What you got?
Yes. My number one is a movie I was waiting for two, almost 3 years before I finally got to see it. And I was afraid it was going to disappoint me because I had had my hopes up for so long, but it did not. And that is St. Maud.
St. Maud.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. Let's hear about it.
St. Maud is kind of a disaffected loner movie. It's sort of a supernatural taxi driver.
That's a great description.
Well, sort of supernatural, I suppose. It's one of those movies about a person who's by themselves and very lonely and possibly very mentally ill. And you just hope the whole time that someone's going to come along and help them, but nobody does. And they get worse and worse. And I guess that doesn't sound like a very exciting thing to watch, but it's also incredibly scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very scary. And the woman who made it, Rose Glass, is a very self-assured filmmaker for this being her first movie. It's very polished and it's got a great creepy score. I just loved it. It's definitely the best, the scariest movie of the year for me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the wait for St. Maud. It's one of those like Antlers and The Green Knight, you know, some of those mm-hmm. that were just like, why are they holding on to this? Because do they not have confidence in the movie? Because otherwise, the amount of money they could see back from it during a time when people had no choice but to stream movies. Mm-hmm. We saw so many big companies releasing to streaming and getting money from that. Why did they hold on to St. Maud? I started to think, and I definitely thought, because it came out on Epics.
Who right.
Epics.
Nobody.
E-I-X. No one.
No one even knows how to say it.
No. Epics.
Is it Epics or is it Epics?
I would say Epics.
I see. I've never called it Epics.
I don't know.
I always called it Epics. We don't know.
Sam, St. Maud?
I have not seen it.
Okay.
But I have it in a list of movies to watch.
Okay, Amy. Oh. Let's talk about it a little bit, because I'm going to just read you, because I honestly forgot everything I thought about it.
Oh, jeez. Because you probably saw it in 2019.
I don't know. I don't know how long ago I saw it. So I found my review. It says, St. Maud has no B plot. It is an 84-minute character study anchored by Morfydd Clark's masterful portrayal of Maud, a deeply disturbed private care nurse who takes her calling to predictably violent ends. At a brisk 84 minutes, St. Maud contains graphic sex and shocking moments of inspired practical effects, but ultimately serves as a preview for what is hopefully to come from Rose Glass. It could have been Sunset Boulevard and Lucky McKee's May put together, but is not quite the full course A24 fans might come to expect. So it sounds like I liked it.
It sounds like you were underwhelmed to me.
Amy, I'm going to watch it again, because you're not the only person I know who, since this movie has actually been available to people, has really found the merit in it. It sounds like when I watched it, I was influenced by the fact that it had been held onto for so long and landed on Epics, that my whatever high hopes I'd had for it had been pre-diminished for me by that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I don't know, it's sort of a grower too. You know, the first time I watched it, I knew I liked it, I knew the very last scene was incredibly shocking. And
I love the way it ends. I love Sam.
The way it ends is amazing.
Sam, you're going to love. And like, it's a small commitment too. It's just not that long. Yeah. Where now? Where can you see it now?
Hulu. It's on Hulu and Paramount Plus.
Okay. I've got all of them. So I don't have Epic. I signed up for the free trial and then there's nothing on.
Yeah.
There really is.
There's nothing on there except literally for Saint Maud.
Yeah. So I think that was my thing. Cause it sounds like I really enjoyed it for the same reasons that you really enjoyed it. And I think the ending of that review seems to sound like a warning to A24 purists who may be expecting a bigger thing than what it is, or expect it to be more A24 than it is. But it actually is very A24. I hate that it's
weird. Pretty A24. It's
pretty A24. God, how does that sound? Oh, but they A24 used to send me every single movie they had. I remember with Room with Brie Larson, they sent me the book. They sent me the autograph poster.
Cool.
Whoa. They just, anyway, got some big britches now. Sam, your number one, please.
My number one is not necessarily 100% about the movie.
That's good. That's good.
My number one is Black Widow. So
yeah, Black Widow. Yeah.
This is the first movie I've seen in the movie theater since COVID.
Yeah.
And as soon as the lights went down and the trailers were done, I literally started crying. Yeah. I was so excited to be back in a movie theater watching a movie. And as I'm starting to tear up and cry, somebody in the theater yells, "We're back."
Oh, no.
And it was like one of those moments. And then the opening credits of this movie, I don't know if anybody else picked up on this or not, but obviously I love Florence Pugh from Midsommar. And in the opening credits, there's like all these crazy, like little snippets of pictures and videos and things like that. And there's a little snippet in one of them of these young girls, I think it's in black and white, with the ribbons around the pole and doing the whole dancing thing. And I'm like, did they put that in there for her? That is cool. Because it just made me think of Midsommar. And so it was great. I like the Marvel films. I have been watching all the stuff on Disney Plus for the shows. I am excited for the finale of Loki tonight because he's my favorite character. But I really enjoyed this movie. We haven't had a female-centric Marvel film since Captain Marvel. And so I was really looking forward to this last year and then last fall and then last winter and then spring. And so here we finally are. And I commend Disney for putting out on Disney Plus and movies at the same time and sticking to that. That was awesome. But this movie was great. And like, there's a whole scene where they're talking about hysterectomies and women's reproductive organs and all of that stuff just very plainly. And I'm like, suck it. That is awesome. Like, this is the best. Because you could see and feel the men in the theater kind of get a little uncomfortable. And it's like,
and the guy in the helicopter was too. Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. But,
right?
He was.
So I thought it was a really fun movie. It really put the women front and center. It talked about some of the crazy things. You know, you talk about the Room and Hydra and all this stuff that they put them through, but it's also like, that's what we do today in society a lot for with women as well. And so it kind of was really cool to see it in a film. All the actors were great. I like Rachel Weisz, David Harbour, like it just was good. And it was a fun one to be the first one to go back to. So
yeah,
that's my number one.
That was a great pick, Sam. You touched my heart, man. I almost cried too. The only experience I had in the theater where it was just me and someone else, and someone did something, was when I saw Neon Demon. I thought I was alone, but someone vomited about 5 minutes before the movie ended. Amy, are you close?
I'm fine. Go on.
Fearless Leader of the Bloodlust. Do you do Marvel movies?
I haven't for a long time. I stopped watching superhero movies with, I think, the Avengers.
Oh, okay.
It's been a long time. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I was real into the X-Men back in the day, like the older ones.
Brian Singer. But
yeah. But that was kind of, I don't know. I got tired of them.
They definitely have oversaturated the culture. They are definitely television on screen, episodic television on screen. Yep. And they are, you know, but on the other side of that, it's Marvel. They spent decades and decades and decades with crap while DC raked everything in, and they were better. So X-Men will always be in my heart. So I feel you on that. For me, Black Widow, out of Captain Marvel, Wonder Woman, and Black Widow, it is the most violent. It is the most serious, but it is also the most feminist of the three. Because Captain Marvel is playful and has no romantic subplot. And really, she's the star of the show. And Brie Larson, I just absolutely unequivocally love. I don't know if any of you are watching her YouTube channel, but it is the best.
What's she doing there?
Oh, my God. Plays Fortnite with Tessa Thompson in one episode.
Aww.
There are several that are just about her air fryer, where she tries different things in her air fryer. She does the show from the couch. And Wonder Woman, of course, while so revolutionary and so sweeping in its scope, is, and definitely with 84, still a love story.
Mm-hmm.
And a hetero love story at that. And I think what we can have in Captain Marvel is our hero that anyone can kind of identify with, because we don't have that. And I love that. Black Widow, yeah, definitely the most feminist of the three. Solidly about women's issues, like you said, Sam. And women working together and women helping each other. It really ticked all the boxes for me. So I think it's a solid pick for number one. Amy already said my one, which was Zola. So I don't have a whole lot more to say about that other than what I already did, except for I believe Janitza Bravo. I'm not exactly sure how you say her name. Janitza, the director of the movie. I think the best thing I could say about it is this: the big news, like the week that Zola came out, was that Tarantino was going to retire. Like, he was either going to make one movie more, or he'd just put out his book that was about a movie that's already been out for a few years. And we, I think, can all agree that culturally we are past Tarantino at this point, and he's more revered by old people and white male film purists for the most part. And while his stuff will always be appreciated, and some of it is still fun to watch, we don't need him. And no more is that evidence than in Zola, which is, I think, every bit as revolutionary as Tarantino felt in his time when he was new and at his best, except for it is not derivative, but rather of the moment and really of the future. And so I really think that he can go ahead and retire. We are fine, because she can do anything that he can do. It's obvious. This is how it felt to see that cinematic voice happen, except for this is not ripping off anything. It really is the real thing. What do you think, Amy?
It had that kind of excitement that you feel when you know you're watching something that's totally new and that you're going on a kind of a ride. Which is funny that you would compare her to Tarantino, because when I was a little kid, what was Pulp Fiction? 91?
94.
90. Okay, that makes more sense that I was able to see it.
Sam bought it on tape for $100.
I so
oh my
did.
God. Well, I probably would have too if I had $100 then. When I saw that in the theater, I had that same kind of excitement.
That was baller.
As when I was watching Zola.
Yeah. I saw Pulp Fiction 17 times in the movies because it was out for a year. It was out for a year because at the 6 month point, it was just getting like its traction and popularity and attention. So they just kept it in theaters. So I saw it, yeah, 17 times. I've never watched it again. I've never even watched Pulp Fiction on tape or DVD or Blu-ray or anything.
That's funny. I don't think I have either. I saw it 7 times in the theater. You beat me by a whole 10.
Well,
that's
a
crazy.
Lot of them, there were some where I made out during it, so I didn't really watch it. There were some where, what? Everybody did.
Never.
God, there's a lot of 90s movies where I know I bought the ticket. I probably still have the stub, but damn if I ever laid eyes on that screen. I was a teenager, you know. Yeah. And also, for the record, Lebowski's better in Pulp Fiction. That's just my feeling. I walked out of that movie, I walked out of Lebowski, and I was like the hugest Tarantino Pulp Fiction fan. And I walked out of that, and I was like, oh, they, Coen brothers, this is better. Oh, I was so mad about that was better, but I had to admit it. Anyway, we're talking about Zola. Zola is, I want this director to just be given all the free rein to make whatever they want to make. Mm-hmm. Because this is the most exciting filmmaker that's out there. And this is the most exciting movie that I can think of. It's out there. So everybody go see it. We're at the end. Thank Aww. You. Is there anything, and I'll ask you first, Amy, you are looking forward to for the rest of 2021, something that's like your, I gotta go no matter what, gotta go see. There is a correct answer to this, by the way, but welcome to send me, say a few of your titles, but there is.
Well, I want to see The French Dispatch whenever that comes out.
Yeah, it'll be semi-soon.
October or something?
Yeah, I was going to say before the holiday. I mean, there's already trailers playing in Art House Theater, but I'm not exactly sure on the release date. So fall is probably a good guess.
And I just heard about Julia Ducournau's new movie, and I really want to see the shit out of that.
Yes.
Pardon my French.
It's okay.
Otherwise, I don't know. Otherwise, I don't care too much.
I want to see the merde out of that.
Yes, I do.
Okay. No Candyman?
That's
is it ever coming out?
Yes.
When is it supposed to come out?
I want to say August or October or something.
Yeah, it's pretty soon.
I'll be there with bells on. Yeah. Trust and believe.
Yeah.
I just have lost track of all of those release dates. Whenever Antler is coming out.
I don't know what's up with Antlers. But I can just tell you, our movie theater in Athens that was going to play Green Knight right before everything closed kept that Green Knight poster sitting there for a year. Year and change. I don't even remember what it's about anymore.
Nope.
A Green Knight? No, I'm just kidding.
Probably.
Who knows?
For me, it's Candyman.
Candyman.
Up and down, Candyman. I cannot.
I'm looking forward to that one, too. And the Ghostbusters.
Oh.
I'm looking forward to
right.
I thought
Afterlife wasn't coming out till next year now.
I thought it was still this holiday season.
Well, okay. Somebody will have to check on that.
I guess we'll have to do a podcast about it.
You know, if Gillian Holtzman's not in it, it's just, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm strictly an Abby Holtzman Patty. You know, I'm that guy. Anyway, let's not talk about Ghostbusters. Let's talk about Amy's podcast and where you can find it.
Oh, and purveyors of fine podcasts anywhere. The Bloodlust. You can go to our website, bloodlust.net, if you want, or iTunes or Stitcher or however people do that.
Yes. Amy's The Fearless Leader, The Bloodlust, and it is a great show because they don't sit there busting on horror movies or plant themselves as some kind of gatekeepers of this genre.
No, certainly not.
At all, Amy holds it down. I listen to, this is the only horror podcast I listen to.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you.
Sam and I, you are free to go back through the last however many the feed does of Friday Five episodes and Oscar Picks episodes. We go back to 1995, Sam and I, at Blockbuster Video. Oh. Wow, what a difference. Thank you.